Welcome to another episode of The Stacks. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas. This week for The Stacks Book Club, we're discussing Motherhood by Sheila Hetty with our guest, author Joe Piazza. Before we dive into that discussion, let's talk a little bit about our sponsor, Audible. Audible is a huge database for audiobooks. They have almost 200,000 titles. I'm currently listening to Hunger by Roxane Gay, and I'm really enjoying it. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you can't be reading. I personally listen when I'm driving or cooking or folding laundry or things like that. Listeners to this show get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Another way you can support the show is by contributing to The Stacks through Patreon. Patreon is a membership website that allows you to be a part of the literary lover's corner we're creating here for as little as a dollar a month. Once you contribute, you're a member of The Stacks Pack, and you get inside access to the show, like finding out guests in advance, helping to pick future books, and exclusive giveaways. Patreon allows The Stacks to create the content you love and still retain full control over the integrity of the show. And listeners like you make that all happen. If you're looking for more of The Stacks and want to connect with other lovers of the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/thestacks and join The Stacks Pack. I have to be really candid here. If it weren't for Patreon, it would be nearly impossible to make this show. So thank you to all of you who have joined. And if you haven't yet, it's never too late. Did you know that if you shop on Amazon, you can also help The Stacks by clicking through the links in the show notes or on our website before you shop? The Stacks earns a small commission off these purchases, and it comes at no extra cost to you. It's super easy. You click the link, then you shop. And it's almost like guilt-free shopping because you know you're helping out one of your favorite podcasts. Okay, here's the last way you can help the show. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please, please, please rate and review the show. These reviews especially help The Stacks get to new listeners and audiences. It means a huge, huge amount. This week, we got a review from Baby Boomer on Board that says, quote, "We met on Instagram/Bookstagram. What a nice discovery. I love listening to Tracy discuss books and life with her varied guests." That's it. That's the review. It's that simple, clear, amazing, takes like 2 minutes, and it means a great, great deal to me and the show. So if you have the time, please rate and especially review the podcast. Okay, let's get to it. This week, Joe Piazza is back. If you didn't listen to her last week, go ahead and check it out. Episode 23, we talk about women in politics and all the things that Joe loves to read. Joe is the author of summer's most relevant political fiction book. It's called Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, and it's about a woman running for Senate in the 2018 midterm elections. So it's very current. Joe and I are discussing Motherhood by Sheila Hetty. There's no spoilers this week, so you can listen and not be worried if you haven't quite gotten to the book yet. All right, let's do it. Here it is, Joe and I discussing Motherhood for the Stacks Book Club. All right, y'all, we are back again this week with author Joe Piazza, and we're talking about Motherhood by Sheila Hetty. It is a biographical fiction. I think that's what I heard her call it in an interview, about the choice or the decision whether or not to have a child. And it's her, it's kind of like an inner monologue into her thought process as she moves from her 30s into her 40s.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of the rundown.
That's it. No, that's exactly what it is. I mean, I've always kind of had trouble with biographical fiction.
I didn't know it was a thing.
It's a thing. I mean, but I'm kind of like, just write a memoir.
Right.
Like, if you want to do it this way, just write a memoir. And I think that's my biggest issue with this book.
Okay.
Is that I'm like, one, you don't feel like fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're straddling that line, it's interesting. But at the same time, this book just kind of, a lot of it feels like you said, I mean, it's an inner dialogue, a diatribe about this one subject.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fiction to me.
Yeah, I agree.
And I have so many thoughts on this book.
Okay.
And I don't want to come right out and say I don't like this book. I think Sheila is a beautiful, beautiful writer.
Yeah.
I don't love the fact that this is the really the only thread in this mm-hmm. novel, in that it's just like constantly hitting you over the head
right.
with this subject. Whereas I think this is a subject that has to be explored.
Sure.
The concept of motherhood and women and how society has told us that motherhood is supposed to define our lives.
Right.
But I think that can be accomplished by weaving that into a well-driven plot in a novel, such in a way that it normalizes it.
Right.
As opposed to just constantly smacking you in the face with someone's internal monologue and reading anyone's internal monologue. And I feel this way when I'm reading a lot of these kind of biographical fiction by men, mm-hmm. which everyone's like, oh, this is such a literary classic. And I'm like, come on, it's like a bunch of whiny men. It's right. a chick lit. It's just, it's written by a guy, so it doesn't have a pink cover.
Right.
I'm like, I don't want to be in your head. What may, like, I'm bored with being in your
right.
head.
Well, I don't want to be in my own head.
I want to be out of my own. I don't want to be in
That's
anyone's.
That's why I'm reading.
Exactly. I don't want to be in anyone's head. And
yeah.
so it just, it feels neurotic and overwrought.
Sure.
To me.
Yeah. We're going to spoil this book, but you can't really spoil this book.
You can't really spoil this
book. So just, if you haven't read it, that's okay. We might spoil it because you might not want to read it, or you might want to read it more or less.
Yeah.
But, that's my spoiler alert, basically. What I felt about this book was that it was too long for what it was.
It's a magazine article.
Yeah. And I did hear her say that she originally started it as a piece of nonfiction, mm-hmm. and she had interviewed many men and women about the idea of becoming a parent. And I almost wish it had been that.
Yes.
Because that, I feel like you would get different perspectives. But I think what happened is she did the interviews and then she thought about her own life and her own feelings about it and then kind of merged it all into one thing.
But
and
it
so
still
you lost
reads,
the debate.
You lost the debate. You lost
right.
the debate. And I don't think that you, the great thing about fiction is kind of losing yourself in the fictional characters.
Sure.
And I didn't find any of the characters actually likable or relatable at all in the book.
And then I kept being like, are these actual characters or is this her actual partner?
Is this her actual life.
Yeah.
And so I have two huge issues with the book. The one is that I'm like, it shouldn't have been fiction.
Mm-hmm.
My other huge issue, and this one is even bigger, is the setting up that you have to choose between motherhood and art.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such bullshit.
Sure.
I mean, I'm a writer who had a baby while writing my last novel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel more productive than I've ever been.
That's interesting.
And I think, again, while we need to be exploring what does it mean to be a mother and to be defined as a mother,
mm-hmm.
but to say you have to, I feel like I have to choose between one or the other, it's a complete bullshit dynamic. And it also makes me think that she didn't interview enough
right.
people who had very successfully continued their lives and their careers with a child. Like having a baby did not interrupt me
sure.
at all.
Did you always know that you wanted to have a child?
I did. I mean, it's not for me. Getting married and having a baby wasn't the defining characteristic mm-hmm. of my life. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, everything is going to be perfect and complete once that happens. I mean, that's having a New York Times bestseller, right?
Right, sure.
Totally right. different. But I knew that I wanted a partner and I knew that I wanted kids. And mm-hmm. I'm happy with how it all turned out. I think what drives me nuts about this book is just making it so fraught.
Mm-hmm.
Making that decision so fraught and making that decision seem like, oh my gosh, if I have this baby, it could be the end of everything for
right.
me. And I'm like, no.
Right.
Like,
but I do think
stop being so self-important about it.
Sure. But I do think that fear is real for women on the precipice of having a baby or like starting to run out of time for having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't have kids. And one of my big fears is I'm like, what
do
if I have
kids?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But one of my big fears is like, what if I have a kid and then my whole life is just ruined and like I have to start liking like kid things. And I know that there are women who have kids whose I would say their lives are ruined because they start liking kid things.
Yeah.
And then I also have people in my life who have kids who are like cooler than they ever were and their kids like can use a can opener. And, like,
right.
You know, like so I know that that's not real, but it is something that freaks me out. Even though I intellectually know it's not real, I still am like, well, I won't be able to go on this trip with Miles out of nowhere. Like, I'll have to get a babysitter.
That's not true at all, though.
Right.
It's just not true.
But that, but
you
I
will
do.
Have, you will have to get babysitters.
I'll have to get a babysitter. Yeah. Mom, come live in LA.
But no, seriously. Actually, the fact of the matter is, you just want your mom to move close to you because being
we're going to redo our garage.
Being able to, you're going to make your mom live in the garage.
Well, it's going
to
be her own unit.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Yeah,
that'll
like separate place for her.
Yeah.
I thought it was nicer than being like stay in the guest room.
Yeah, no, that's better. That's better. We're looking at new houses with a mother-in-law unit.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's separate from the house. You know, LA, the garages are separate from the homes in LA. Right. It's not like a garage.
It's not like a garage attached to the house. You're just going to make your mom sleep on the concrete.
And there's no cars in our garage or anything.
You know, the way that I think about it is that if someone sucked before having kids, they suck after having kids. And if someone is awesome before having kids, they're awesome after having kids.
But what if your kid sucks? That is
sometimes kids suck. They might suck. But also sucky kids usually happen to sucky parents. Like, you know, I mean, it changes things, but it just, I don't think that it's so, I don't like the setup that, because Sheila Hattie's setup perpetuates the stereotype
that it will ruin your life.
And I think that that is so unfair to women. And also because one of the things that you have to make sure going into having a child is that you chose to have a child with the right partner.
Right.
You know, it ruins your life if you chose a shitty guy to make a baby with.
Jake, you're great.
Well, and Nick is wonderful. He's a great dad. I flew down to LA and he's back in San Francisco watching our baby, and he's about to fly down here for my book party tonight.
Is the baby coming?
Oh yeah, yeah. You get to meet Charlie tonight.
Can't wait.
Yeah, yeah. He's very good at the book events. I end up like holding him at some point during like all of the panels. But I also don't think that she necessarily in this book chooses the right person to procreate with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also anxiety inducing.
Sure.
I mean, I dated so many guys who were awful for so long, and had I had a baby with them, my life probably would have been awful.
Awful.
But that's not the baby's fault.
Right.
That's because I was stupid and chose a bad guy.
Right. Sure.
I had a hard time getting through this book, mostly because I don't like to be in someone else's head and someone else's head that I so
disagree with. Yeah.
And again, I think it could have been one magazine article. There's no reason it should have been a book.
Sure. So last night I went to a book event for Asia Gable. Do you know she wrote the ensemble?
Yeah.
And she actually was talking about, she was a classical musician, and her book is about classical musicians.
Yeah.
And I haven't read it yet, so I can't really speak to the book. But what I do know is that she was saying there's a part of the book that like takes the perspective of one of the wives of one of the classical musicians and like how that woman had to kind of bear the load of having a family. And she talks about how like a lot of classical musicians who are women don't have children, or if they do, they have to take breaks from their work and all this stuff. And she kind of brought up this idea that a lot of creative women are at odds with motherhood because there's this fear of creativity getting, or their child getting in their way of their process, and also because they create things from thin air, right? Like you create music, or you create the sound, or you write the words, you perform the part, that there is a part of creating that is fulfilled in your work that other women might not have because they, you know, do other jobs. And I thought that was a really interesting, when she said it.
Does she have kids?
She doesn't yet.
Okay.
Right. But still, I just thought it was an interesting thought that like as a creative person that there is an anxiety around it. I think once you have the kid, it all works out and you figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think like the thought of it.
The thought of it going into it. Having that anxiety going into it.
And like which creative women decide to have children and which don't.
And which choose
and when
not to.
They choose to do it in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, I'm not – I say this all the time. Being a woman is so hard. It is. It's so hard. And because of the fact if we don't want to have children, we're judged by society a certain way. If we do want to have children, like, yes, parts of our life do end up getting put on hold because we physically have to carry around a baby and then physically push it out of our bodies, which makes you feel like you've been hit by a goddamn truck.
And you have to do it in a certain time frame.
And that time frame does happen to be the time when you are at your peak of creativity.
Right.
And I think that I just have these strong reactions because I'm coming out the other side of
it. You're fresh off a baby.
I'm fresh off a baby. I've actually never felt more creative. I'm more productive. I'm better at organizing my time. I do less stupid bullshit. Like I'm not surfing social media all the time. Like when I have an hour to get something done, great. I just wrote 2,000 words in my next novel.
Great.
Boom.
Right.
And I know that I want to be a mom. And so I just figured it out. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm like, you know what? If you want these things, you just figure them out.
But like, that's like everything, really. But,
and that's everything. That's just life. I think right. that I'm just like I'm kind of generally over people whining about life mm-hmm. and not just like, just figure it out. Stop agonizing. Everyone's just a little bit too neurotic
right.
about everything.
Right.
You figure it out. You make life work.
Yeah, it's true. And you're right. People are... Being neurotic is very in right now.
It's so in right now. And, I mean, being neurotic has always been in.
Sure.
I mean, I lived in New York forever. like every Woody Allen movie ever.
Right.
But the difference now is social media.
Sure.
Now we're seeing everyone's neuroses
right.
on their fucking Instagram.
Right.
And I'm just like, I'm so bored by it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, one of the things that I've started to try to do in my life, which it's turned out to be way harder than I thought it would be, which is reframing being busy.
Yeah, same.
As like
same.
A blessing
oh my gosh.
And not like I teach fitness classes, so mm-hmm. I have to wake up very early to do that.
Right.
Like this morning I taught at 6:15.
That's crazy.
I'm gonna take a nap later.
Yeah.
I hope before I have to teach tonight. Anyways.
Yes.
But it's like I go and I do this and then I have you coming here and I have to put this together and I have mm-hmm. to read this and I have to do that. And I'm like, this is great busy.
It's great busy.
This is great busy.
Yes.
Like I chose all of these things in my life.
Exactly.
And like, so I have to assume that if I had a child, if I chose to have a child, I would be more busy, mm-hmm. but it would still be good busy.
Good busy.
Bad busy is like going to pick up someone else's laundry.
Right.
And like doing shit you don't want to do.
Going to the doctor.
I actually like going to the doctor because that is one of my neuroses. It's like, I just like to know that I'm healthy. So I feel really good. Like when I go to the doctor and they take my blood pressure and I'm like, yeah, motherfucker, like,
yeah,
exercise.
I'm so healthy.
The dentist is bad busy.
Exactly.
But yeah, like that there's this idea that like everything is negative. Every decision is negative. Like what I like about this book, what I really liked is some of the things that she comes up with. Her dexterity of thought
mm-hmm.
is really impressive.
Oh, absolutely.
Her ideas and commentary on motherhood, I really like. But I do hear what you're saying about the like, agony over the decision making mm-hmm. is like a little bit like, okay, we get it.
It's a little much. I found the coin trope a little much.
At first, too. I hated it.
Yeah.
But then I started to be like, this is kind of fun. Like,
yeah.
I kind of like when I, because like the way the book is written, it's very like, there'll be paragraphs and then there'll be like line, indentations.
Yeah.
And then it'll be like half a page and then there'll be like a page break. And I kind of liked that style.
Oh, see, I didn't. See, I don't. Like when I'm reading, like for some reason, I'm like, when I'm reading fiction, I don't love experimental fiction
sure.
either.
I don't think that I do either.
It's shocking that I love like Visit from the Goon Squad so
okay.
much, but I just do. Like I just think Jenny Egan is just like
okay.
the best writer,
okay.
except for Manhattan Beach, which I just can't
you
get
can't
through.
Get into.
But yeah, I don't love experimental fiction. I'm like when I like a novel to be a novel, I like fiction to be fiction. I don't.
Yeah, I kind of liked it because I knew that I was getting through the book faster.
Right, right. Hey,
which is
fair.
Terrible, but it's true. I'd be like, but, oh, it's only like.
Yes, and again, I want us to talk more about motherhood and
yeah.
like the different ideas around motherhood and how
yeah.
we characterize motherhood. I think it's super important.
Yeah.
The book just wasn't for me.
Yeah. So one of the things that she talks about like, she talks about abortion a little bit.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very interesting because she says that, and I don't disagree with this necessarily, but that part of the reason that men are so invested in abortion, in the abortion debate, like politically and in the world, is that it's less about the child, which I think we all mm-hmm. kind of knew, and more about this idea that like women are supposed to have children.
Yeah.
And that women are a conduit for more humans. And
mm-hmm.
so like if you cut that off, then you're no longer requiring women to do the work that they were made to do. And it's like this antiquated, really sexist thing.
Well, it's a control thing
control.
Too, right? I mean, like men really have no control
right.
over making babies
right.
in a lot of ways.
Right.
And so or control over perpetuating the species, if you want to go even like more macro
mm-hmm.
than that. And so by trying to control a woman's way of, you know, reproductive rights, that gives men, even subconsciously, even like good men, it gives mm-hmm. men back control of
right.
which they feel like they're losing by women
right.
being able to make that choice. I'm also really happy that she talked about abortion. I think abortion is something we need to talk about much more openly and honestly and get rid of the stigma of having an abortion. Mm-hmm. I loved Cindy Levy's New York Times op-ed. Cindy was,
I didn't see it.
So she was the editor-in-chief of Glamour for a long time. And she talks in this op-ed about how she has written about abortion. And, you know, they're certainly Glamour is very pro-choice. And yet she never talks about her own abortion. And so she talks about her own abortion in this op-ed. And it was really powerful. And I had an abortion when I was 16. I talk about it very openly with people. I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, I think that that decision was the right decision for my life. I've never regretted it. Mm-hmm. But I'll bring it up to some people and people cringe as if we can't say the word abortion.
Right.
And I was talking to one of my friends who's a magazine editor after Cindy's op-ed came out in the Times. And I was like, we should do this. I'm like, I could organize a lot of women writers to talk about their own abortion experiences. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'd love to. We talk about it all the time. We'll lose advertisers. I mean, it's just, it's amazing to me. So right. I mean, I appreciate that that is in the book and that it's something that we can talk about more openly now.
Right. Right. I mean, as someone who's married to an OBGYN, I get a lot of birth stories and abortion stories and miscarriage stories and stillbirth stories and then also just irregular pap stories. I get all the stories.
You get all the stories. You know all about every woman's vagina
and
pretty
much. It's interesting because we end up with a lot of people's stories that aren't as close to us as you would think they should be to tell us about these stories. Yeah. But I love it. Yeah. Like, because I feel like it arms me with information like to be in the world when people have something negative to say about abortion. And like, look, I understand that abortion is never something that people choose lightly.
Never.
And I
think that's the thing
that people miss.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people think that women are literally like having sex with 20 men unprotected and just like, I'll get an abortion tomorrow. Like,
exactly.
That's not it.
That's not it.
Even if you're 15, like even if you're young and dumb and whatever, or even if you're 40, like it's not something.
No, it's always a decision that it weighs on you.
And it's a story and it's a moment.
It's a story and a moment. And that's, I mean, it's interesting because so I wrote an abortion scene or an unplanned pregnancy scene into my last novel, Charlotte Walsh. And I made the decision to have her not undergoing the abortion. She has a miscarriage right before she does it, but she grapples with it and it's hard and it's difficult. And I wanted to show that very, very honestly in a piece of fiction. And when I start to talk to women, like if it comes up in conversation, women that I hardly even know are like, oh, yeah, so when I had an abortion, let me tell you my story.
Right.
One of my friends was like, I had an abortion so long ago that I had to pull the yellow pages out of my parents' closet and look up. She's like, and I didn't know what to look up in the yellow pages because this was pre-Google.
Right.
And like, you know, but we should talk about that.
Right.
We should have that conversation.
It's such a major thing in a woman's life.
Well, it also isn't something that should be politicized the way that it's politicized.
Right. It's none of your business.
It's none of your business. Right. Like, it should be completely taken out of politics.
Yeah.
Full stop.
It's one of those things that I get fascinated with. Not that they're the same thing at all, but I liken it a little bit to Israel in the sense that I'm like, why do all these white men politicians in America care so much about my uterus and about Israel?
And gay
like,
marriage.
Yeah, like there's
Why I would like to talk to you about taxes.
Yeah.
I would like to talk to you about education reform.
Sure. Like, or how about like, roads?
Roads.
Sure.
Bridges. Bridges.
Super.
Yeah. Like,
jobs sound good.
Why are we attaching any of this to what happens in my body?
Right.
What happens in someone's bedroom or what's happening across the ocean?
Right. Like it's like there's so many other countries that have disputes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but y'all are obsessed with abortion, Israel, and like bathrooms that transgender
people. And bathrooms
people,
that transgender
like,
people want
to do you
use.
Not understand that transgender people also have to use the bathroom?
They also have to go to the bathroom.
Like that's the thing to me that I'm like, so what do you
what do you want them to do?
Like,
do you want them to go pee in a bush?
Yeah, like I'm so sorry. That's the one that I'm just like, fuck you and the horse you rode in on because like the humans. Not you don't have to do it.
Mm-mm.
You don't have to decide that you feel that you were born in the wrong gender. Like
but it's also, it's just not government. That's the thing. I'm like, there's so many, I've, you know, become so much more, like I've always been a journalist covering politics, but I've become so much more politically active personally.
Sure.
Especially now that I'm not covering politics on a regular basis. I'm kind of allowed to.
Yeah.
Again.
Because it's tricky if you're doing both.
But you also just see so many things on the local level that need to be fixed. And people are obsessed with these issues. I'm like, no, seriously, like there's no free preschool in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I'm about to have to shell out $40,000 a year that I do not have. Mm-hmm. And it's not even tax deductible. Why can't that be fixed before you start talking about regulating my uterus?
Right. Sure. Like, why don't you worry about the kids that are here?
The kids that are here.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like either take care of the kids that are here, all mm-hmm. of them, or leave all me alone
or
on
leave
my
me
decision.
Alone on all of my decisions.
Yeah. Like,
yes.
Truly.
Yeah.
Not that I planned this, but since we're talking about children and Israel, she talks a lot about the Holocaust mm-hmm. because there are Holocaust survivors in this character's family.
Yeah.
And I did think that that was a really interesting connection just because, I mean, she talks about a little bit that in Jewish culture, like because of not just the Holocaust, but even before that, like that there's so much oppression of the Jews by different mm-hmm. people that there's a huge importance put on having children.
On having children. On,
and so that's
yes.
an interesting mm-hmm. tie-in. Like you have the Holocaust on one side and then you have like this intense cultural pressure to have children. And she's kind of somewhere in the middle of
right.
that. And I really liked that filter.
No, that was I think that was a great filter.
Yeah.
Because, and I think even if you're not Jewish, even if you don't have that particular pressure on you, mm-hmm. women generally do feel that pressure.
Right.
Like we do feel the pressure. Oh, this is what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a really fascinating framing of
yeah.
this is what we're supposed to do. And if I'm not doing this, what's my purpose?
Right.
Because also for so long, women's purpose was to procreate.
Yeah. And I think,
then to have the weight of something like the Holocaust on your sure. shoulders and be like, I should be doing this for my culture,
right.
for my people.
Right.
It's heavy. It's so
yeah.
much more.
And I think that's true of other marginalized communities.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I'm Black and Jewish, so
right.
I get it from all sides, you know.
All
but
sides.
But I think there is a lot of pressure in the Black community also to have children. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the history of slavery and
yeah.
like, so like the Black people having children is also double-edged in a sense. It's like they were bred for
mm-hmm.
their children. But also then there's this whole fucked up narrative about, you know, crack babies and like
which was proven false.
Right. Well, right. It's
yes.
bullshit.
It's total bullshit.
And like also like the father's not being home and
yeah.
this and that. And like there's this whole like negative lie campaign out about Black babies.
Yeah.
And then that these crack moms want to have abortions and these babies are super predators. And then on the other side, it's like Black people are bred to be athletes and performers.
Right.
And like
exactly.
there's so much cultural There's so much that's culturally connected to different groups' babies, right? And then
mm-hmm.
you have like in China where it's like only one
only
child.
Only one child.
And
or
like
a
boy. The boy.
A boy child is better. I was actually getting my eyebrows waxed the other day and the woman waxing my eyebrows was Chinese. And she asked me about – I said something about having a one-year-old. And she's like, oh, well, what is it? And I was like, it's a boy. She's like, you're so lucky.
Mm.
She's like, I have four girls. And I was like, oh, my God. And she, like, felt shame and guilt about it. And I was like, this
wow.
is terrible.
Yeah.
It's so terrible.
Yeah. That's a book I would like you to write for me is like where you travel the world. And after you did your marriage year,
mm.
you do the baby.
The baby year?
The baby year.
We're thinking about it. We're
oh.
thinking about it. We travel internationally with him a lot. He's been to Europe twice already. Took him on a Sicilian road trip. Sicily's
mm.
the best place to be with a baby, which is why I'm also, I think, I know that I'm very privileged and I will check that like right here. I'm well aware.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why having a baby hasn't changed us. But we're also not like crazy rich people.
Right.
Like we trade off childcare. We have not had full-time childcare for 14 months. My husband and I have made it work between
wow.
the two of us.
Wow.
Which has been crazy. And sometimes we hate each other
mm-hmm.
and it works. But we took him to Sicily on a road trip and I was taking him into the bathroom to change him. And this man, the owner of a restaurant in Sicily, follows me into the bathroom. And I was like, what's happening? I'm going to die. He's going to murder me and my baby. And he followed me in so that he could make me a changing table
mm-hmm.
out of, with like a pillow and a cushion in like a window. And he did. And I came out and then he handed me a glass of wine.
That's
and
sweet.
I'm like, this is a country that fucking loves mothers.
Right.
Well, like, and America is a country that
hates
despises
mothers. Well, hates women.
Hates women and therefore hates mothers.
Right.
I mean, there's no changing facilities in the majority of restaurants or on Amtrak. I call out Amtrak for that every time. No changing tables on Amtrak. You know what I do? Change them on the floor of the train. So
disgusting.
Disgusting. Bless you, Amtrak.
Thank you for your support.
Yes.
Well, in Charlotte Walsh, we talk, I mean, we're changing books. We talk about Charlotte and her husband takes over childcare for the children for optics reasons.
Yep.
He has to do it. They can't have a nanny for optics reasons. But also, like, this idea that he's sacrificing so much to do this work, like that it's so beneath him.
Yeah.
Just, it's, that's part of America hating women,
that's
right?
That's part of America hating women. And I mean, it's part of, I wrote Charlotte because I do think that we need to deprogram culture in a lot of ways. And like, that's another thing we have to deprogram.
Right.
Even my husband, who's like this crazy feminist man, he's not working right now. And so, and I'm doing a thousand things. I've got this podcast. I'm working on a new book. I'm on a book tour. And I'm like, you need to take the fucking baby.
Right.
Full time. Like, I'm not hiring a nanny just because I'm available less. If I weren't working, I'd have the baby full time. And even him, the most feminist man in the world, and you'll meet him tonight. It grates. It's hard. It's hard on him to be the less ambitious one, the one that's not working right now. Right. And the one taking care of the baby full time.
Right.
And it, that's amazing to me. And if it's that hard for him, imagine how hard it is for the majority of men out there. And but it's because men haven't been programmed. Like, I think when I get to spend time with the baby, I'm like, I really feel like I'm winning. Like, I like to be with him. But men haven't been programmed that that's a win for them. Like, they that doesn't make them feel successful in any way.
And they haven't been asked to really challenge that in any way.
Never.
Right.
Never.
Like,
not in our country.
A few weeks ago, we did Shonda Rhimes' book, Year of Yes. And she talks about how, like, no one ever asks other TV executives, where are your kids?
Where are your kids? No.
Or how, like, she's always like, the first question I get is either about diversity or my children.
Or my children.
And, like, nobody asks white men.
No one ever asks white
men. What's it like being
that?
A white guy with children?
And it's the same thing on the campaign trail. I mean, women political candidates are constantly asked, who's taking care of your kids? What does your husband think of your campaign stance?
Right.
Except I interviewed one congressional candidate for Committed, Lauren Baer, and I can say her name because she was also on Committed. And she doesn't ask those questions because she has a wife, because she's a lesbian.
Because there's a mom at home.
Because there's a mom at home. Yep.
Right. But her her partner is also working full-time.
Her partner also works full-time. It's just, but like, people don't feel the need to ask that question because there's another woman.
Because they don't care what her partner thinks of her stance.
No, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Because there's no man involved.
Also a fucking great episode.
So
I loved that episode.
I love them so much. Lauren Baer, her primary is on Tuesday.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Florida, it'll be passed.
It'll be passed.
But if you're in Florida and Lauren wins her primary,
then vote for
her.
Vote for her during the main event.
I think it's just, while we're doing this really quickly, I don't normally do this, but just make sure that you're registered to vote wherever you are right now. Just, it's a good time. It's
100%.
September. And there's an election coming up. And register to vote and vote by mail if you can. Mm-hmm. It just makes it really easy for you. And I don't care who you vote for. I do care that you vote.
I don't care who you vote for. That's the thing. Like, you know, in the book, Charlotte skews Democrat. I originally wanted to make her an independent. It's logistically difficult.
Really hard.
Logistically difficult, like, if you want to actually set it in how politics really works.
Because then you don't really have an opponent. You have two opponents and nobody
cares
about you.
Exactly. So I couldn't make her an independent. But all I care about with people reading this book is that it inspires them to register and to vote. I don't care who you vote for.
Yeah.
I want you to look at women candidates.
Right.
I want you to go out there and find women candidates that are running on both sides of the aisle. Because I think when women run, they're often trying to fix something. And they're trying to fix things for women on both sides of the aisle.
Right.
We need childcare to be tax deductible. We need better maternity policies. Mm-hmm. If we don't want to lose out on creativity, if we don't want to lose out on our careers, like, we need women to help us set up for success.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. So go register.
Register.
Just in case you're
it's
not.
Easy. It's so easy.
It's so easy.
You can do it by mail.
Yeah. You can do it by mail. You can do it online now.
I know.
It's amazing. And check the mail-in ballot. It just makes your life easier.
If
you have a hard time remembering to vote, just do the mail-in.
It comes
to your
house.
Ballot.
Yeah,
so
it comes to your house. California makes it really easy.
California makes it so
easy.
Okay.
All right. So
totally unrelated.
Hashtag public service.
Yeah, we're doing our best here. One of the other things that ties in to this whole, like, anti-abortion thing that she touches on, that she doesn't quite draw the lines to the two things, but it's about women as a passageway for men.
Yes.
That, like, a woman, her vagina, her uterus to vagina to the world, is a is the way that men come into the world mm-hmm. and then are able to exist and then are able to perpetuate anti-womanness, manness, and mm-hmm. that there's a sense of guilt in our lead narrator about the potential of that, which I thought was interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And that also that men outside of the womb, adult men, realize that about women, that they are a passageway. So if abortion is allowed, they could cut off that passageway.
Yeah. They're essentially creating a road blockade.
Right.
Yeah. In that passageway. No, I mean, she has some really great philosophical thoughts
yes,
on totally. Womanhood and motherhood. But like I said, that's why I'm like, can this just be nonfiction?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I almost felt like by the end, I was like, this is nonfiction. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I just,
it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not fiction.
And like I said, I think sometimes it is just too much like smacking you in the face over and over again.
And it's a little cynical.
And it's too long. And it's a little cynical. And, you know, I think I'm getting over cynicism mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
I'm cynical about cynicism. I'm sick of
yeah.
cynicism.
Yeah.
I'm kind of exhausted by it
sure.
Because of what's happening in the news all right. the time.
Well, when the first lady wears a jacket that says, I don't really care.
I don't really
do
care.
You?
Do you? Like, yeah, exactly. And so
I'm really into caring now. I didn't realize.
I'm actually into caring. I'm actually into not thinking everything is fucking terrible all the time.
Right.
Because it's not. And I loved what you said about reframing busyness.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people love to use busyness as a badge of honor and people love
right.
to use neuroses as a badge of
yeah.
honor. And I'm like, can you just enjoy your fucking life
right.
a little bit?
Right.
Like instead of like giving into all of these anxieties all of the time, like
right.
let's actually try to be happy.
Right. I think it feels better.
Yeah.
Like it feels, you feel more important in your own world.
Exactly.
And
exactly. Everyone thinks that busyness is actually being important.
Right.
And I'm like, it's not like I know like I'm actually quite busy right now.
Mm-hmm.
Been promoting the book and doing all of this
right.
stuff. I also never don't reply to an email or a text message.
Right.
Meanwhile, I feel like people in the world are getting worse at that
yeah.
these days. It's just like flakiness and not responding.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have time. If I have time to
you
do this,
time.
You have time.
Right.
Well,
you make time for
you
the things,
make
that,
time
are
for the things
you.
That are important or just to be a kind human being that lives in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I read most of the books that people ask me to blurb, or at least I start them.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like one of my pet peeves is authors that are like, I'm just not blurbing right now. I'm like, God bless you. God, especially if it's a first time female author. I'm like, do you know how much that blurb means to this person?
Right.
I had two young women authors who I blurbed their first novels come to my book event in New York at Books Are Magic. And I was like, you two should know each other and you should help each other for the rest mm-hmm. of your careers because you're both women authors and women authors aren't always nice to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And here's your email addresses. Go forth and
be friends. Are they friends?
I think so. Okay. Their books are coming out, like came out like around the same time. And I'm like,
okay.
Promote each other's books. Like,
yeah. I love when I see that.
Yeah. I love when I see that. I'm like, I will like. I think other women need to be helping and promoting other women as
yeah.
much as possible.
Sure.
And we're not.
No.
No.
It's hard.
It's hard
for people to understand that what they're doing is not in a vacuum.
Exactly.
Like that your work is made
mm-hmm.
better, bigger, more
exactly.
visible by those around
by
you.
By those around you.
And that if
yes.
you have a platform, you should help.
You should help.
And if you don't have a platform, you shouldn't be afraid to ask for
nope.
help.
Nope. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
But that's all stuff that goes against everything that we're taught. Just like
mm-hmm.
men thinking that having to be the primary caregiver is like a demotion.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's, you know, that's the kind of stuff
we
should be questioning.
Culture doesn't, again, I mean, while I've been on this book tour, I've just been ripping pop culture.
Sure.
Because I think that the TV and movies have given us one way of being a woman.
Yeah.
And books, too.
Right.
I recently read a thriller that was one of the summer's big thrillers. Both of the female protagonists, who were supposed to be portrayed as like strong, smart women,
mm-hmm.
were quitting their jobs shortly after getting married.
Mm.
And I'm like, really? In the year 2018,
we're still doing that.
We're still showing that this is an aspirational thing.
Sure.
And it was just like written in as if it were, again, something that's normalized.
Right.
But
there is also this fantasy, I feel now, of like going, like that there's a, like a repercussion, or not a, I don't know, I can't think of the word, but because of the 2016 election
mm-hmm.
and because of like this quote unquote failure on like a strong woman's part,
yeah.
that there's now this drive to go back to like the 50s for women. Like that, like, yeah, to be able to be a stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm, is something that is like a badge of honor in a sexist way, and not in the way that being a stay-at-home mom is a badge of honor in being able to provide for your family.
Right.
And like, I'm not denigrating that, but that there's this idea, romanticizing
the concept of the stay-at-home mom.
Right, that being a strong woman is bad.
But I also blame Instagram for that.
Sure.
Because I think the Instagram influencer generally, sure, has created this like kind of like, look at these beautiful, like, look how beautifully I've designed my house, and look how beautiful, like, these beautiful, right, cookies I make as the stay-at-home mom. And right, like, I love stay-at-home moms. Part of the time I am taking care of my child full time. And
right,
like, so therefore, like, Nick and I are both stay-at-home parents.
Sure.
Half of the time. But I was in the house of one of these influencers in San Francisco, and it was a fucking mess.
Sure.
And like, so it's all fake. So we're creating these like fantasies of what it's like to be a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
The same way that we create fantasies of what it's like to live on a farm. You know, like, everyone loves the Instagrams of like, I just live in a goat farm now.
Right.
Like, being a farmer is fucking hard.
That sounds like my nightmare.
Yeah.
It's one of the Instagram things I don't like.
Yeah, but people are like, well, you're just getting back to basics and back to your roots.
Right.
And like, isn't that wonderful? And I'm like, no, none of you would be happy on a farm. No. Have you ever touched a cow's nipple?
Right.
It's weird.
It's not something I'm interested in doing, thankfully.
But
I guess that's maybe where some of the cynicism comes in from this book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that there's this anxiety around not just having a child, but also like the pressure of being a good parent.
Oh yeah. I mean, that sucks. Like,
yeah,
it does. There's so much pressure around being a good parent. I stopped reading the internet because it's, sure, so bad. And I do think that maybe I should write a book on how to be a mom. I don't know. Learning from different cultures, but
sure. I just reread If Beale Street Could Talk by James Baldwin.
Oh yeah.
You know, the main character is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a spoiler. It's like the first 5 pages.
Yeah.
And she drinks like whiskey like 8 times in the book. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, y'all, these people, everybody turns out fine.
Everybody's fine.
Like, our parents were drinking.
Yeah. I had wine. I mean, had wine during my pregnancy.
But like this
not
idea.
A lot. I wasn't hammered.
No.
Yeah.
You can have a glass of wine.
But
later.
And everyone is so, well, and that's the other thing like that I think we need to talk about motherhood. We're just precious about it. We're precious that there's one way to be a mother.
Right. Like, your kid should be on the ground.
My kid's in dirt most of the time.
Right.
Like, my kid is like barefoot most of the time.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
I
there's
like,
just like.
Yeah. There's certain things that I think are important, like, to being a good parent. I think one of them is that like your kid should be like respectful to other people.
Yes.
That's like the, honestly, my number
one
thing.
Just raise a good human.
Yeah, like,
that's
your kid should say hello to adults, mm-hmm, when they can talk. Your kid can't talk yet.
He can't talk. He can say dog. He says dog to every adult.
If he says dog when, yeah, I come in the room, that's fine.
He's going to say dog.
Great.
He says hi, dog.
Perfect.
Hi, dog,
that's
to
great.
Everyone.
But,
yeah,
like, those are the things that matter. It doesn't matter if your kid is like,
plays the violin,
sure,
at 14 months.
Unless your kid is really good at violin at
and
14
then, and
months.
And likes it and, yeah, wants to play the violin.
Sure, if that's,
yeah,
their calling.
That's
there's
the
just
thing.
So much extra. Like, my kid has to play soccer and be a cheerleader
and
do
And my kid has to be
volleyball.
Perfect all the time. I'm like, your kid just has to be a kid.
Yeah.
I just want your kid to be a kid.
There's so much pressure that's added to parenting that, mm-hmm, I think that, like, I can speak for myself, that gives me anxiety.
And
about
that scares people. That totally scares,
sure,
people. I mean, and like that's why I like just being honest about my own experience with motherhood. And again, I like it more than I thought I would like it. Like, I didn't know. I didn't, mm-hmm, know what was going to happen. And,
right,
like, I genuinely, I'm really enjoying it, but I'm also not a crazy anxious freak about,
right,
it. I'm like, you know what? He ate dirt the other day. He's fine. He's going to be okay.
Problem. You don't want him to eat like detergent. Probably.
Yeah. No, I don't want him to eat poison. Poison would be bad.
Yeah,
he's
fine.
14 months and he can walk, but doesn't want to. Not freaking out.
No.
Not freaking out that the only thing he says is hi, dog.
He's fine.
Like, he's fine.
Yeah.
He's good. Yeah.
Yeah. If he's like 10 and he's like,
if he's
not
10
walking,
and he's only
then...
saying hi, dog, and, he'll,
yeah,
and he crawls around, we might have a problem.
But like,
but then I'll let him go live with
you
wolves.
Have time. Yeah.
Wolves somewhere.
Well, that's when you're going to be a
yeah.
vet.
That's why I'm going to be a large animal vet.
Just in
exactly.
case.
Slash paleontologist. Yeah.
just in case.
So yeah, I mean, I just like what I do want to break down and what I think motherhood actually by the Sheila Hedy book actually makes it worse is that there's too much anxiety around it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get rid of the anxiety. I think
right.
people like having the anxiety. Women have been having children since the beginning of humans.
Right.
And you just, like I said, you just figure it
you
out.
Figure it out.
Well, yeah.
That's something that my husband always says about child, like about actually giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his job is very stressful because a lot of people don't think about this when they think about OBs, but
yeah.
they are dealing with a very high stakes moment in people's life. And it's a positive moment. Most of the time when you go to the doctor for something, especially something high stakes, you might go to surgery or whatever, it's a negative thing.
It's a negative
thing. So you're
thing.
Expecting something terrible to happen. So he deals with a lot of the pressure of, you know, I'm the sole responsible adult right now because everyone else is like, this is the best day ever. And he's
mm-hmm.
like, you're bleeding. Like,
yes.
this is bad.
Yes.
So aside from that part of it, he talks a lot about how, like, it's really fucking easy. like to deliver a baby. Like if you have a healthy baby and a healthy mom and like, you know, everything's going good, like it's something that people are able to do.
Yeah.
Like we're able to
Your body is meant to do this.
So like taking out some of like, you know, and he's like, you don't need to do a fucking water birth. Like just come here. Let's just have a healthy baby.
Let's just have a healthy baby.
Let's just get the baby
out.
You
don't need a playlist.
Right.
You don't need your like soft jams playlist.
No,
you don't need the room to smell like a certain candle.
Sure. You don't need 50 people in the room. But he does talk about how it's just like having a baby is super, it's like the naturalist, most natural thing.
Yeah.
Naturalist. The most natural thing. And like I said, there are definitely complications and like you should listen to your doctor.
Yes.
And don't be selfish about your water birth if you have an issue.
No.
But it's like we sometimes forget that people have been doing this for
and we build it up and we become crazy about it because I think people like to be crazy.
Yeah.
People want to be neurotic. I think people love their anxiety.
I wonder how we can make people less anxious.
I don't know.
How you can make it like cool to be like
cool,
calm.
Cool to be calm. Yeah. I don't know because it's kind of like it's kind of boring, right?
Yeah, like I'm anxious. I feel like I've been less anxious since I started doing this podcast. I was always a creative person and I kind of stopped performing. When I started doing this podcast again, I've been less anxious.
Because you have an outlet.
I have an outlet. So maybe if you feel anxious, you need an outlet.
Like a podcast.
Or like a painting.
Or ecstatic dance.
Yeah. Or whatever it is. But I do think that like...
I do think you need an outlet. But I also think... I genuinely believe social media is making everyone more anxious. Sure. Because I think everyone's comparing themselves to people all the time. I mean, it's what... Like when I took Instagram off my phone and put it on Nick's phone, I only put it back like for the past couple of weeks because like for book stuff, I have no choice. Right. I have to do it. My anxiety plummeted.
Do you like the motherhood cover?
It's fine.
I think it's pretty. I like the watercolory.
Yeah. It's watercolory. It's pretty. I mean, I don't think there's, I mean, I think it's exactly what it should be for the book that it is.
It is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I love a lot of the things that are happening with book covers. I do think we're finally seeing women's books not just have pink covers and not just have pretty women in high heels on them, on the covers, or lipstick or martinis.
Right.
For Glynis's book, No One Tells You This, originally it had a slice of birthday cake and a martini on it, and it had pink on the cover, and she's she's like, I don't even drink martinis. And it was a memoir about a woman being 40 years old. She's like, why are you doing this? For a long time, I think that the publishing industry wanted to Sex and the City-fy everything.
Right.
And I'm happy that they're not now.
Me too. Because I think, I mean, for me, that's like my nightmare when I see a book like that.
It's my nightmare. I mean, yeah. And I do still read a lot of those books. I was talking to the woman that I'm working with to develop Charlotte as a TV show. And she's like, I still read all those books. She's like, because there's some really great stories in them that we could turn into TV shows. And I'm like, totally. But like, it's a giant turnoff. Like my stomach
twists.
When you
see those covers.
And when I've been doing talks in bookstores, because we've been traveling all over the country, we stop and pause and make people look around the room and look at all the covers and compare a woman book cover to a male book cover. And
that's
really
interesting.
It's really interesting. There's this one bookstore in Hawaii on Kauai. And it's like, you know, obviously like the most far like possible West independent bookstore in the country. And she divides all the books by men and women. Mm. And she says she does it because it makes it easier for people to find books, because people usually know if it's written by a man or a woman, like what color the cover is. But you just see a sea of pink and then a sea of not pink. And it's fascinating to see.
It's so interesting. I was just saying that I don't own any pink books.
Yeah. And well, I know.
That's also based on what
but
I
But that's
like to
based
read.
On what you like
all
to read.
All my books are black, white, and red.
And there's a reason that Charlotte is black, white, red, and blue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Makes sense.
It also looks really nice on us. I have a sweater, a cashmere sweater that says she likes to win.
I saw that in the picture. The blue and the
red.
It's
a Lingua Franca one. It's so good.
My friend has one that says, I miss Barack.
Uh-huh. Like Lingua Franca. My friend Rochelle's company. It's so good.
Oh, my God. So beautiful. Well, do you have any final thoughts about motherhood?
The book or being a mom?
The book. The book.
I don't. I mean, I think that it's an important book because I think that books with women's voices are important and books that question things about culture that has been so ingrained for women are important. I just don't know if it should have been a work of fiction or if it should have been this long.
Right. I agree. I think if you like books that are meditative on something, you will really like this book.
You really like this book.
I think that if you are looking for more of a conversation about motherhood, this might not be your book.
Might not be your book. And I also, you know, I think if you're in a certain place in your life where you are anxious about having children, it's an interesting book.
Yeah.
As a new mother, I found it insulting. And so I think that that's the problem. Because I think... her anxiety over motherhood changing everything for her is almost insulting to new mothers.
Sure.
Because it's like, you're making me seem like I made the wrong choice. Right. And I don't like that dichotomy at all.
Well, so there's even a part in the book towards the end where Miles, who's like her partner, he talks about like people who have children who complain about having children mm-hmm. and how hard it is. And he's like, it's kind of a problem of your own making, which kind of does lean into our conversation about like the anxiety of everything, mm-hmm. which is true. But also this book is kind of a problem of her own making.
It's a problem of her own making.
Which is yeah. basically the moral of this whole episode is everything is a problem of your own making. Can you rework that?
Can you rework that?
Can you rework that?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
exactly.
just that like there are things that are unknown and it's okay.
And there's always going to be things that right. are unknown. There are things that are unknown if you choose not to have children. Right.
Do you know Cheryl Strayed?
Yeah.
Did you read Tiny Beautiful Things?
Yeah.
You know that section about the person who wants to have a kid and she's like, it's like your rocket ship that passes by in the night. You write down all the things you imagine in your life with mm-hmm. kids and all the things you imagine in your life without kids and you pick one.
And the one
you pick is the life that you live and the other one is like this other thing that travels past you in the night that's yep. like your unlived life.
Thinking
about it like that.
But I don't even know if I like thinking about it like that because it's like, yes, it's your unlived life, but even saying unlived life makes it seem like you're missing out on something.
Well, I think that her point was that this yeah. person was very anxious about mm-hmm. both decisions and that right. she was kind of saying like, you're going to live a life.
Yeah.
And then like there are things that will maybe never happen to you, but there's right. also all these things on this piece of paper that you wrote down that were amazing things that you wanted to happen that will happen.
That will happen to you.
And so I like that it was kind of like,
yeah, so what? Life happens.
But like it's the same thing as like if you walk out the door now or you walk out the door in 5 mm-hmm. minutes, like something could be different. But just thinking about it as like it's not so tangible that you're missing out. But no. it's just like this unlived
other
universe
journey.
Of you.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I like that.
I like that.
I wish this book was a little more that.
A little bit more that. Mm-hmm. Because it actually does – and because I think she ends up making the decision that she does not necessarily want children, I think it ends up skewing
anti-kids. Right.
Anti-kids, anti-mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Well – we're interested to hear what you guys think. So message the Stacks on all of our things. And send us messages. I want to hear what you guys think because I know a lot of you loved this book.
A lot of people love the book. And I'm nervous about saying I don't love it.
Oh, no. But... we're big book panners over
here. Good.
I gave a book 1 star that I did on this show, which I was like, how will I get through this? And then everyone was like, yeah, I hated it. I was like, oh,
great.
God,
thank God. Well, because we have to not everything is awesome and amazing. Like yeah. we have to be critical about things.
Criticism is my favorite thing in the yes. world. I like a 1-star book
mm-hmm.
because it gives you stuff to talk about.
Gives you something to talk about. Exactly. Great. And like I said, Sheila had a beautiful writer.
I like the writing. There's a lot of this book that I think is really beautiful and amazing. Mm-hmm. And like, and then there's stuff in this book where I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
That's fine.
That's a book.
That's a book. That's what happens. Yeah.
That's a book. Take it from us. All right, y'all. Well, thank you so much for being here, Joe.
Thank you for having me and the croissants and for wearing the same t-shirt as me.
Yes.
Because
see.
I felt loved the second that I walked
this
in the door.
So great.
Well, it was fun because I saw you through the window and you looked at me and I thought you looked at me like I was like not supposed to be here or something.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what? It was really because I was wearing the shirt.
Because we were twins.
Yep.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week. I won't tell you guys who our guest is, but it's someone really good. And then the week after that, we're doing Less. By
Yay.
Andrew Sean Greer. Yeah. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
That's all for today. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our guest, Joe Piazza. Check out Joe's latest book, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, in stores now. Thank you to our sponsor, Audible. Get your free 30-day trial and free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thestacks. Remember, you can join the Stacks Pack and be a part of creating this podcast and earn awesome perks by going to patreon.com/thestacks and contributing as little as $1 a month. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. I'll see you in the Stacks.